Woodstock, welcome.
Good morning, family. I'm Denise Mathis, and I'm an alcoholic. And it's truly God's grace, sponsorship, and the fellowship that I've been sober since 15 October of 88. And I guess to get the thing going, I brought some show and tell. I want to thank the committee, number one, for giving me the opportunity. That's always cool. And for Leah asking me, that's always the right thing to do. And I don't know, I think there's a couple of newcomers that I was talking to earlier. And when I was new here, I mean, even still today, I mean, I had the attention span of a gnat sometimes, you know what I mean? I mean, I got my head going and I'm thinking about all this other stuff, but what, you know, where my hands are, basically. But I'm bringing this Kleenex box for three reasons to show you. Well, actually, no, it's not a box now, but number one is a very good possibility I might cry. So then it's always good to have the Kleenex. And I used to pride myself on, you know, big girls don't cry. Well, now I like cry at Hallmark commercials, so that's really weird. I mean, it doesn't take anything, a Hallmark commercial, and I'm crying, so I probably might need the Kleenex. But the other thing is that I remember early on, my sponsor, I was saying something about issues. You know, people got issues. And she said, Denise, issues are like tissues. I mean, they're just, you know, you just, there's always something. You know, there's always something, especially with us, seems like there's always something. And once you, you know, you're always going to have something, just like the tissue box. But basically, this is the new tissue. This is the Kleenex now. The Kleenex company, I guess, said, okay, you guys, we got to think outside the box. So that's why this is what they have now. This is their new thing. So basically, to me, when you first come here, you have to think outside the box because none of this stuff makes sense, really. I mean, it sounds Greek, kind of like the stuff they throw around in the slogans and all this stuff. It just, well, what does that supposed to mean? I mean, you could talk it, you can parrot it, like Rachel said yesterday, you know, you can imitate what you heard, but to really get it, you know, you got to be around the rooms and discuss it or something. So I guess that's why, you know, really, you got to really kind of think outside the box. I do know, without a doubt, though, without a doubt, that you have to be present to win. And that people that don't go to meetings, they don't find out what happens to people that don't go to meetings. So I've always been a meeting maker, and I will continue to do that. In fact, my grand sponsor used to say you needed three meetings to maintain and four to grow. So I would prefer to do four a week because I prefer to grow than just to, you know, take up a chair. So basically, like I said, I've been sober since 15 October 88. And really, you know, I really, like, I don't have alcoholic parents. I don't come from that. I don't really, there's, like, no reason that I should be an alcoholic, you would think. You know, I don't fit the mold or whatever. Had a really good upbringing, actually, and probably started drinking when I was a teenager just to fit in, you know, one of those type things. And so that's kind of how that went. And, you know, my claim to fame now, I'm getting this, I don't know. I mean, I shared this one time and now all of a sudden it's my claim to fame. But I'm now becoming the pickle lady. And the reason for that is that I really, you know, you could really, you know, we don't engage in controversy, but we really like it, you know. I mean, we're not supposed to, but we really like controversy. And so basically, you know, there's so controversy as far as why you're alcoholic, you know, like you were born that way, your parents, you're this, you're that, you know, the potty train thing. You know, people always, oh, I wasn't potty trained right, you know, like that's going to really make you an alcoholic. But for me, what happened basically, what I believe, my controversial thing is that I just drank too damn much for too damn long. Is really how I think I became an alcoholic. You know, I started out like just kind of drinking to belong to, like, everybody was doing it. So you're just kind of doing it because they're doing it. And especially when they're buying it, you're really doing it. And so, you know, so then I kind of just started out like that. Well, probably when my son right now is 21, and probably when I was his age, I was maybe already an alcoholic. I joined the Air Force when I was 23, and I think then I definitely was already an alcoholic then. Because it just, like, you know how you take a cucumber and you put it in the sauce, whatever it's called, something, whatever the name is. But when you put it in that sauce and you just leave it in there, the cucumber, it gets pickled. So basically, it's like that's what I think happened for me. See, I kind of was the cucumber to start with, because I don't know that I was born that way, and I don't come from alcoholic stuff. So I think I just stayed in the sauce too long. You know, I like to be in the sauce. I like to hang around people that were in the sauce. Then after a while, everything I did was, I didn't do anything that drinking wasn't involved. And drugging, I got the drug thing going on too in my story. Part of the era, I guess, if you want to say. So I guess to me, see, that's kind of what happened. And then somewhere along the line, I crossed the line. I don't know when that happened. I don't know what age. I just know that because I drank so much, and then I drank for so long that, what would happen, you know? So then I got pickled. But the whole thing about the pickle and the cucumber thing, you know, once it's a pickle, it can't be a cucumber. I mean, even if it wants to be, even though if I came here, I really just wanted to learn to drink socially, once you're pickled, forget it. Forget it. I mean, you're in the pickle barrel, you know what I'm saying? You're not, that's it. But really what is that saying to me is actually what happened, just skipping ahead. What really the whole bottom line about that is that when I was maybe 6 months sober, I asked a guy one day, I said, how would you know if you were really an alcoholic, like for real? Like there's any doubt, you know, I'm in the rooms, I mean, come on. And he said, basically, he told me the cucumber and the pickle story. And then at that time, probably at 6 months sober from being around the rooms, I knew that I knew that I knew that I was pickled. I mean, I just knew from looking back at my drinking and what I did when I drank. And, you know, it says in here, let me get this. Because it's easier to find in my book for some reason, like it's not the same book. But, you know, because it says in We Agnostics, if when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely. I always had great intentions. I really always had great intentions. Like, I'm going to just have a couple. And why is it that we always say we only had a couple? No matter if we had a couple cases, we only just had a couple. You know, it's like, well, I only had a couple. You know, it's like, yeah, right. Okay, so I really always had, you know, like after work on Friday, I'm just going to go have a couple. That was really what I was going to do, really. But I could never quit entirely. I could never quit entirely. Not for a moment, but never entirely, never. Nor did I want to, nor did I really want to. Or it says, or if when you drink, you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. Well, there, right, that's me, right there. Because once I started, and even though I passed the couple, forget about it, I'm off and running. I'm having fun, and you know, in the beginning, it was fun. It is fun in the beginning when you're first starting to drink. It's really fun, it really is. And then, you know, somewhere along the line, then I started getting in trouble. I was still having fun, but I started getting in trouble. And then in the end, and when I came here, I was 34, and then all I did was get in trouble, same like. It was, like I told my son, I said, honey, every time I drank, I did not get in trouble. But every single time without fail that I got in trouble, I had been drinking. There was no exception to that, no exception. Stuff started happening, I started getting in trouble, and it was always my drinking, whether it was with my boss, you know, oh my God, I always got hangovers, no matter what. I always seemed like I was hungover. So it was kind of like that type of thing. It was kind of like, you know, just with my drinking, then it just ended up, I was always in trouble. And I don't want to, you know, we all know the drinking thing. I mean, we all know the drinking thing. So I don't want to really spend a lot of time on the drinking thing. But let's say how I was I was a typical woman alcoholic, and still today I just was in a relationship, and for some reason, I don't know if I'm the only woman that's like this, but I always confuse sex and love. I don't know what that's about, but I still always do that. Did it then, before drinking, during drinking, after drinking. I mean, I just kind of like, maybe that's a woman thing, I don't know, it's a definitely me thing. Confuse the sex and the love, I don't know, I get it mixed up. But, so it's kind of like what I did, you know, that, you know, the typical alcoholic woman thing, you know, and doing stuff that you either don't remember doing or wish you didn't do or whatever. But one night in particular, this is kind of like you didn't stand in the way of me getting, I was married, you didn't stand in the way of me drinking. basically. And the only reason that I probably didn't do more drugs or that it didn't go any further than it did with me is because I joined the military. And they don't play it. They, back when I joined, that was back in 77, well, it was kind of, you know, the drinking was esprit de corps and camaraderie and all that, but the drugs, no. They never played the drugs, never. Zero tolerance. So I knew right off, I said, oh, I can't be doing this because I will get kicked out. But one particular weekend, my husband at the time was, he was out of town, and I had my daughter, and she was young. I'm thinking she's probably as old as my grandson, maybe 15 months or somewhere around there. And so she's, you know, still a baby, like in a crib type thing. Okay, so this whole day, this whole Saturday, I worked in the yard. I mean, I worked in the yard. I cut it. I mean, we had this huge yard. Cut it, weedy, you know, I mean, just you name it. I was in the yard all day. And the whole day I'm in the yard, I'm drinking. I got a beer in the freezer. I'm out there drinking a beer. Then I finished that one. I put, you know, another one in the freezer. I mean, I'm in Louisiana at this time, stationed in Louisiana, Shreveport. And I just kept those beers flowing the whole day. You know, I got one in the freezer, drinking all day long. Hot, I'm out there doing the yard. Well, by the time the whole day's over, I've been out there all day, and I've been drinking all day, but I've been doing the whole time. And then it's like maybe 10 o'clock at night. Well, I want to go out now. Because when I, you know, I want to party now. I'm ready to party. Now I work, didn't I earn it? I mean, come on. So what do? I change and everything, but then I don't want to, like, call my sitter because, I mean, dang, I've been drinking all day, and it's 10 o'clock, and I'm going to call my sitter to keep my daughter? I mean, I don't think so. So I went. I just left her, and I went. And I don't even think anything of this. I mean, talk about not being a man. I mean, wow. I mean, that is the thing. I'm telling you that because that is the thing. That is the thing that really makes you feel crappy. And every time I would think of me doing that, that God entrusted me with these kids. Now I had two kids total, but with this child, and then my drinking is more important than that child. And I went to the bar, and I guess I had a good time. I don't know. I just do what I always did when I went to the bar, you know. It's never enough, and, you know, you don't want the bar to close, and I just remember the whole way coming home. Then I'm praying to God, please just, oh, I hope nothing happened, you know. Like I'm thinking, part of me, see, and I got this committee. I always have this committee of these people in my head. And the person that does the right thing, you know, and then the person that doesn't, and then the person, you know, they all got their own little opinions. So it's like this battle in my head, and part of me is saying, well, what, I mean, come on, give me a break, Denise, like the house is really going to burn down. I mean, what do you think that for? And then this other part of me is like, you know, oh, my God, what am I thinking? You know, I'm just like, I can't even believe I did that. You know what I mean? Like, what would make me, you know what I mean, how you're just your head the whole time I'm driving home, and I can't get there fast enough, and so I'm wanting the speed to get there even faster, which, you know, then I'm like, God, what if I get stopped? And, oh, my goodness. Like, I could have avoided the whole thing by just not going. But no, but, you know, that's where my drinking took me. It's just like stuff like that where I just didn't care. I just didn't care about you or, you know. And the fact, really, of you asking me to be here today. And even last night, I went to a wedding. I actually RSVP'd and went to the function, okay? That's huge for me. Because when I drank, you know what? I didn't care. I could have told you I was going to be there. I could have RSVP'd. I could have whatever. But come the day of the event, if I didn't want it, too bad. Oh, well, too bad, so sad. Sorry about your luck. If I didn't feel like it, I don't care. If I'm hungover, if I just want to do something else, if I just want to be into me, if I just want to do whatever, I wouldn't have cared that I told you. I wouldn't have cared. I might have felt I would have probably had good intentions even maybe, but it wouldn't have stopped me from doing what I wanted to do. The selfish thing, you know, I wouldn't have cared. Even if I said I'd bring a passing dish, I wouldn't have thought anything of it. And now I can't get it. If I tell you now I'm going to do something, that's what I really think about before I commit. If somebody asks me to do something, if they can't let me sleep on it or get with my sponsor or have a little thought, then the answer is no right there. Because I don't like that nowadays. I don't like, don't put me in a corner. Then I feel like I'm in a corner where I have to give you an instant answer. Mm-mm. If you can't give me a minute to think about it and, you know, sleep on it, pray about it, something, then I can't. So Because if I commit today, I'll show up. If you have my word, you got it. I took this position with the GSR as I just got nominated that for the, for my home group. So for 2 years, and I'm saying to Lee, I'm like, God, that's like such a commitment, man. I got to go every month to the meeting. Every quarter, every 3 months, I got to go out of town to a thing for the weekend. I mean, wow. And then this is so novel. She says to me, yeah, but it's just a day at a time. And now, haven't I heard that before? I mean, it's almost like I've heard that somewhere. I don't know where I heard that, but I've heard, and it just now clicked. I'm, 16 and a half years sober, and it just now is like really the fact that I only have to do today and right now, this minute, this 24-hour period. I mean, God's never going to give me more than I can, handle, basically, in this 24-hour period. So it was like, wow, okay, I can do it then, because I'm looking at the whole two-year thing and everything I'm going to have to do in this two-year time frame. It's like, yeah, I don't have to do it 2 years at a time. I just have to do it right now, this minute, Wow. So novel, some of this stuff. And I guess early on, my sponsor basically just said, Denise, it's this simple. You just do the right things, and the right things happen. It's really a no-brainer. And some of the stuff that, the people that have been around the rooms, I mean, you guys have heard, this isn't going to be anything you haven't heard, because we pair, I heard somebody say one time that if you say it three times, it's yours. Like, if you like something somebody says, and then you say it three different times and three different people yourself, then you can claim it. So I'm like, okay, I was all over that. So it was just like, yeah, that sounds good, or I like that, or, that's cool, or, whatever. I'd latch on to whatever the people said. So, I mean, nothing, this is all stuff you've heard, or you hear other people say, and then, it's just like not a really novel, thing that we come up with. But basically, throughout my drinking, let me just tell you what happened. Because I drank, there's no doubt I drank. And I drank, like I said, just too much. I mean, my drinking is no different than anybody else's. The circumstances might be different. I just maybe did a different man than you. But you know what I mean? It was just like the same type of stuff that happened. And basically what happened, like I told you, I went in the military. And in 1982, I was married to a cop. And I got a DUI coming through the gate. We went Christmas shopping, and it was in December, and I was coming back through the gate, and oh my God, of course, I'm always driving. I love to drink and drive. I'd usually pack a cooler and go do it. It's fun to drink and drive. And so then, I'm coming through the gate. Well, then they want to ask me questions. Like, I don't know why they were doing that, but probably because I was drinking. But so then my husband had to come and get me. It wasn't good because he's a cop, and how does that look? And oh my goodness. Well, it wasn't good because then, I couldn't drive on base, and then, I had to, go to AA for a minute. It wasn't back in the day in 82, because really I didn't have to go. It wasn't like now. In 82, it wasn't. See, how it's gotten way worse now. I mean, man, if you get in trouble now, you really pay. Well, they suspended a stripe. I was, had stripes, and they suspended it, so I didn't lose it. I had to give up money, which was not good timing since it was Christmas time, but, I had to give up money. I mean, they kind of like this list. Okay, you're going to go to these classes, social actions. You're going to, go to so many AA meetings. You're going to, do all this stuff. Well, I think, like I said, it lasted a minute. I mean, I think the most that I went back then in 82 was 35 days. I think that was my all-time maximum amount of time that I stayed sober was 35 days. And then I blamed him for not, because he had Schlitz malt liquor in the refrigerator, which I never even drank, but it was his fault that, I drank Coors Light, so, what did that have to do with it? I just blamed him for having the, if he didn't have beer in there, I would have been able to quit. Well, what, that's lame, that is so weak. But, that didn't stop. So, back then, I'm off and running again. That's in 82. Well, in 88, what actually happened was, this is almost 6 years later. Okay, now I'm divorced because that, I think my drinking cost me the marriage. I have two children. My kids are fixing to be 4 and 6. I'm in Louisiana. Like I said, I was there 10 years. And I get asked if by the military if I want to go to Omaha, Nebraska. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Omaha, Nebraska. My dad goes, yeah, the Cornhuskers. I'm like, yeah, cool. Whoever they are. But, I didn't know anything about Nebraska. I mean, who knows about, wasn't there a show or something, Nebraska, But I didn't really know where it was or anything. So, but I go to Omaha, Nebraska. You know, to me, now looking back, of course, in retrospect, God thing. I get to Omaha, Nebraska. I'm there maybe a year, and it's October. And I'm on base, and I'm drinking all night long. And what my thing would be is that I would start with beer, always start with beer, but then I'd always switch to liquor, which wasn't good for me because then I would black out and forget where I was and what I was doing. And, you know, it's just like the beer didn't take me far enough, seems like, so then I'd always have to cap it off with the mixed drinks or, you know, whatever. And I think I was drinking white Russians, black Russians, whatever. But then again, I'm driving, and I'm driving somebody else's car, and I purposely, I'm at the NCO club on base, and I left the base driving and drove back on through the gate. Now, oh my goodness, like that's just insane, you know, to do that. I mean, why would you do that? Well, then guess what? I'm coming back through the gate, and then they stop me because you have to show your ID. Well, you know, what am I even, I'm thinking I'm not going to get caught. That's what I'm thinking. Which I'm sure, like nowadays, the kids nowadays, well, I'm just not going to do that, you know, and then that's not going to be the same for me as it is for you or was for you, like that. I'm sure that's what my son thinks. But so then, of course, and, you know, I'm belligerent and I'm nasty and I'm, you know, because now they're confronting me and I got to do the field sobriety thing and how humiliating is all that. And, you know, and plus I'm cocky, you know, when I get enough drinks in me, then, you know, F you. I mean, I don't care. And, you know, I don't care. I just don't care. So then, now the heat's on. Now the situation is at this time, I've been in the Air Force 11 years. I'm a single parent, have these two small kids. I'm a single parent. This is my second DUI, almost 6 years to the day is when I get this DUI. And they're not playing it. Now it's farther along. Now it's 88. Now it's getting harder with you drinking and driving and I got a lot on the line, and it's probably, you know, my performance at work where I, you know, I would always be, you know, you always had the flu, seemed like. But, you know, so then, like, I'm in front of my commanding officer, and he's basically making me an offer I can't refuse. And I'm not in any position to, you know, get cocky and get rude and, you know, be a beat over it all, you know. I mean, I'm just like, yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir. The deal that they made, it was October, and they thought it would be more detrimental for my children, being a single parent, for to send me to treatment. They said, let her get through the holidays. Again, I went through the thing. I had to go to 3 AA meetings a week. I had to take every day this lady that I worked for. Now, this is a coincidence. I was in personnel. She used to be the social actions lady. Now she's in personnel. So every day before I left work, she had to give me antabuse. Every day. Had to take antabuse. So I went, you know, because, I mean, I always get sick when I drank anyway, but I guess not antabuse, you get deathly ill. Well, I didn't like really getting sick anyway, so now why would I want to get deathly ill? But anyway, and I knew that the pressure was on me. I knew that the pressure was on me. I was not in a position. So I just started going to the meetings. I didn't have a choice. So I, to me, today, I say I was sentenced to AA. I didn't come here willingly. I didn't want to be here. And I really think that God knew that. I really think that God knew that the only way I'm going to get her in the rooms is she's going to have to get sent, because I don't know that my pride and my ego would have just, I would have just surrendered and said, all right, that's it. I'm through. I've had it. I mean, I said that, but it never lasted. I mean, it never stuck. So I think my God knew that the only way is that if I had to come here no matter what, and I had to prove I came here, then, you know, I think that's what had to happen for me, and he probably knew that. So, like I said, I had to come here, and after I'm in the rooms and I start hearing stuff, and I asked that guy about the, you know, how would you know if you're an alcoholic, and he gave me the cucumber pickle thing or whatever. So, basically, then, you know, I'm in Nebraska, and I get asked if I want to go to San Antonio, Texas. And this is, I got sober there, I'm 3 years sober, and I really like being sober now. I'm going along my journey, and I don't really, I mean, they asked me if I wanted to go to Texas, but then I didn't really want to, like, I wasn't willing. So then my sponsor said, well, here's what you do. You read the third step every morning and every night until, you know, and then we'll see what happens. So that whole thing is about, you know, being willing, basically. So basically what happened is after a week of reading that, I just had this absolute calm and peace. I cannot, the peace that passes understanding, I cannot tell you what happened. All I know is that after reading that from morning and night for a whole week straight, one night, Friday night, I was reading, and it just came over me that it was like God saying to me, I have got your back. I've got you covered. This is, you need to go with it. You need to, you know, I have plans for you there. You know, whatever. I just was like, had this perfect calm and peace that everything was going to be cool, that everything was going to be all right. And so I went to Texas, and that was probably my favorite assignment, which, go figure. I mean, who thinks that that's going to happen really there? But anyway, what I left Texas with was this lady that my grand sponsor, actually. I told you guys I brought show and tell. But here's what I kind of left with. And, you know, I'm a real visual learner. I always have been. I probably always will be. So if you could do something for me visually, then I'll get it. But basically what she said was, and if I probably should have taken advantage of having the kitchen here, but she said basically, like, let this glass represent alcoholism. But we're not all there. You know, that's why we're here. But so, you know, you have alcoholism. So it's not alcoholism, it's alcoholism. Now I'm a pickle, I'm always going to be an alcoholic, no matter if I want to be or not. All right, we already established that part. But what I took away from there is that, and I really feel blessed, and I'm grateful because of the foundation that I got there. I got a really good foundation in Bellevue, Nebraska. They did the deal. They did the deal. Sponsorship, fellow, I mean, it was just, they did the deal. And so I always just did the deal because I guess I didn't think I had a choice, number one. But really, my grand sponsor basically said that how it is here, this is how it works. You have this cup with alcoholism, okay, and you keep pouring into it. You go to a meeting, and you talk to your sponsor, and you work with others, and you go to a convention. Oh, then you're, you know, and you just keep pouring water into this cup. And then pretty soon, especially if you do like a weekend where you got a convention and stuff, your cup is overflowing. I mean, you are full. You're good to go. You are so God-filled. But you know what? It doesn't stay in there. You can't stay sober on yesterday's meetings, basically. So no matter how much water I keep putting in here, it's going to come out because I have alcoholism. It's not going to stay full. If I could stay full, I wouldn't have to come. I could just get it full, and I'd be about my business. But it doesn't. It just keeps coming out because I have alcoholism. And so if you keep putting into the cup, it's going to keep coming out. But you have to ever fill it. That's why I do my meetings. That's why I have sponsorship. That's why I do all this stuff that I do here, because I want to keep this. I want to keep that. And one of the things that just came to mind is that my sister, my youngest sister, it must be the kid stuff that always gets me. My sister had her second child and asked me to be the godmother. You don't get that. The way I was and the way I am right now, that's the only way that I'd be. She is entrusting me with her child. If something happens to her, she is really trusting me that I am going to do right by her child. I mean, to me, that is a testimony right there. I mean, all in itself, because there's no way that what I was and that drunk woman that I was, there's no way that I should have, you know, I mean, you don't, that's like a bonus, man. Of all the things they said, if you make a list, I would have never put. You get to be the godmother of your, you know, your sister's child. I mean, wow. To me, that is just really huge that I get to do that. And you only get that here. And even my kids being raised, I mean, I guess, again, and a lot of people don't have that story, but I feel blessed and I'm fortunate that my kids were, like I said, going to be 4 and 6 years old when I got sober. So they didn't see me. I didn't get to wreak more havoc in their lives. I didn't get to do all the stuff. I'm really grateful that I didn't have to, like, you know, put them through even more. And now my grandson, I have a grandson now, 15, I mean, he won't ever have to see his grandmother drink, because I'm going to keep this full no matter what. I'm going to do whatever it takes to make sure that this cup, because you know what? They say the dry drunk. Who wants that? If I'm going to be the dry drunk, I'm not going to be here, because that's not fun. I mean, then you're like restless, irritable, and discontent. Well, who wants that? I mean, you know, if I'm not going to come here and enjoy it and be happy, joyous, and free, and if I just keep coming here, then God just makes it seem like it's just I do the right things and the right things happen and it's really worth it. You know, the thing, too, that, like, certain things that I learned here along the way is kind of like one of those things where they say, this too shall pass. Like, what does that really mean? Like, okay, like some of the stuff, you know, your brain just goes tilt, 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 because what does that really mean? You know, what is it actually? But when I was going through stuff early on, it seems like it was never gonna end. Whatever I was going through, it was just gonna last and go on and on ad nauseum, you know? But no, that's not true. Like, I got through so many different things, good, bad, and ugly, I guess, that it got over with. Because it's just my feelings, and my feelings are always gonna change, like, no matter what. My feelings are always gonna change. So, one of the other great things that I really learned here is I do have a part. When I did my first, fourth, and fifth step, none of it was ever my fault. Nothing ever was my fault, ever. Your fault because whatever. The only reason I did what I did is because you did what you did. Otherwise, if you wouldn't have done that, I wouldn't have done what I did, and so it's not my fault. It's not my fault. I mean, it's never my fault. It was the circumstances. It was this thing, that thing, what you said, what you did, how you, you know, it was just... My sponsor would say, Denise, what is your part? What is your... So many times she said over and over and over, Denise, what is your part? So now I know I have a part. I really know that I have a part. And it, really, because what happened was I would call her. I was going to call her, and I'd say, oh, I bet she's going to say, what's my part? So maybe I should try to figure it out first before I call her. So I'll have it figured out, and I'll be ahead of her this time. You know, that's what... I said, I'm going to get slick, and so I really try to think about what's my part, you know, and even today, all this time, I'll do a fourth and fifth step on something, and we'll get to the part, where were you selfish, where were you afraid, where were you frightened, you know, what were you the, where was I all, you know, it's like I still have a hard time trying to figure out what, why, you know, because they did that, and that's why I did that, you know, I acted out based on what they did or something, but, so even today, still, I have to try to, you know, always figure out what the deal is or something. But, so I guess the, you know, do have a part thing is kind of huge, I mean, for me. All right? Okay, good. So let's see, the only other thing I really have in here is that what I'm really good at, too, and what I still struggle with today is finding balance. Because if I do something or if I go through something, I always feel that, how do you want to say? It's always all or nothing at all. I'm either the worst person, I take all the blame. I know my part and I take all the blame for the whole thing. Or I don't have a part at all. You know what I mean? It's hard for me to get in the middle of the gray. It's all black or it's all white, but I have a really hard time doing the gray thing. So one of these times it was all my fault and I was so, you know, distraught about it all. My sponsee gives me this little hammer. And she said, you need this little hammer because you're so good at beating yourself up. And I just love this little hammer. She got it at like a dollar store with a lot of the other tools, but the hammer is so priceless. And I even went online to see if I could find a bunch of these because it seems like a lot of people I know beat themselves up too. And so, you know, like sometimes if I'm talking to her, she'll be asking, you want to borrow my hammer? I got my hammer because if you're beating yourself up pretty good. And I just do a really good job at that. But then I'm all that, you know, I'm still, after all this time, I cannot believe how self-righteous, how selfish, how I can still be. It's just like, and I remember really at 10 years sober, I really thought, why I thought this, I didn't have no clue, that somehow... I don't know, I was going to rise above it, I was going to take the high road. I don't know what I thought. I just thought that somewhere along the line, you got to figure it out, break the code, something has to happen. I mean, come on, and I guess I thought at 10 years that just happened somehow. I don't know how I thought that happened. But God just keeps saying, no, Denise, you know, you heard about the little boy that wore the most humble badge, and then he got it taken away because he wore it. You know, that right over here, that would be me. God just keeps humbling me. I mean, he's kind of like the diamond in the rough, and he just keeps trying to smooth my edges because he just keeps working with me over and over and over on different things that, you know, I need to work on, and my selfishness is, it's all about me still. In fact, a friend of mine, we had talked about we were going to make these shirts up, these t-shirts, and we were going to put on there, it's all about me, and then we were going to take that, you know, that circle and the line through a thing and cross out the me and then put God above it. I said, yeah, that would be cool, man. We can make money, man. We could take them to the AA. We could take them to the conventions, man. We can make, you know, people would want to buy those, you know, because it's really not about me. It really isn't about me. It's all about you and what I can do for you and what I can do for God and how he's using me. And, man, what he does for me today, I mean, there's no doubt in my mind now, he just shows up. He just shows up and shows up and shows up over and over again. I mean, working through my life, there's so many different things that I could tell you that, you know, I don't have time to really tell you guys right now. But the other thing, too, is that, you know, and I think it's on October 9th of the day of the Daily Reflections. And how I know that if some, see that part where it says, this is another thing that I was new. Whenever you're disturbed, it's your problem. How is that? How is it that it's my problem when I'm disturbed that it's always me? No matter what, it's always me. But that page on October 9th, see, that's what I read one time or heard one time or something about how, okay, the lady's sitting there reading and then her dog starts barking. And then she's getting all tripped, you know, she's starting to wig out because, you know, the neighbors don't like the dog barking. And so she gets all mad and everything, and she gets up and she calls her dogs, then like, get in here. And she's all yelling at them and all mad and everything because they're barking and carrying on. And, you know, she's all like, you know, in fear probably of what would the neighbors think or something. Well, then another time, same thing happens. She's sitting there reading, dogs start barking, and she's chilled out. She's like, you know, dogs bark. What are you gonna, you know, they're gonna bark. And she just goes over there and she calls the dog, come on, baby, come on, come in, and lets the dogs in. Like, no big deal. That's the exact same situation. The dog's barking. So if I'm disturbed, it's almost like whatever's going on, the circumstances of the people or whatever, that's not even really the deal. It's me. It's my spiritual, wherever I'm at spiritually. That's another reason why I'm keeping that cup full. I'm just so much better, man. When I just do my meetings and I just work with my spouse, I'm so much better. I'm more the second lady with the dogs barking. I'm more chilled out. I don't like wig out. And, you know, I have my moments, but I mean, I don't as much do that with the dogs. They get all mad and, you know, crabby and everything or whatever. So, you know, there's so many things that I could just tell you guys because I was just, man, I love being sober. There's no doubt that I love being sober. And God just keeps showing up in my life over and over and over. I mean, the way that he works, I mean, I could have probably just talked about that. And I started keeping a list because there's so many different things that he's doing. It's just like, oh, my goodness. And the one thing, see, this is what I get so giddy just about, like, this situation. There is like 4 machines at work and 8 machines at the courthouse. That are, I work for juvenile justice, and so every day I go to the courthouse to get the court mail and take court mail. Well, I always check the machines. And you cannot believe I do this always because there's people, I can't believe how many people leave money in the machines. The other day, $1.20. I couldn't believe it. It was like 4 quarters and 2 dimes, and I was like so giddy because I'm like, oh my God, look at this. I was like, God, thank you. And you know why? Because you know on the money, no matter what the money, it always says, in God we trust. And so that's the deal. And just, I'm going to just tell you this last story before I'm done. I'm going to tell you a nickel story, and this is why it's so relevant to me with the finding the money, because it's almost like God, when I really need it, I'll find money. And it's just like a thing with me and God that we got this little connection or something like that. And then when I wasn't finding money for like day after day, a friend of mine said, well, that's because you don't need it right now. I'm like, yeah, somebody else needs it probably or something. But basically, when we were getting ready to move to Florida, I retired from the Air Force. I've been in 20 years. Actually, been in 19 years, I didn't get promoted. So the rank that I was the most that I could be. And after 20 years, I had to retire. So when I'm 19 years in and I'm getting all ready to retire, we get to May of that year, my kids are finishing up school, and we've already been here. We came at spring break to Florida. My parents live in Zephyr Hills, and we decided at spring break that we're going to move here. We get a house, the whole 9 yards. So, you know, once the kids get out of school, we're going to make this move. So then it gets to be May, beautiful day in San Antonio, Texas. Like I said, I love Texas. I didn't want to go there, but it ended up being my favorite place assignment. So I'm walking to the post office one day, I have a package to mail, and I got some stamps on this package, but I know it's not enough. I know it's not going to be enough postage on the package. And I'm just, you know, walking with my headphones, and I find a nickel, and I'm like, oh, cool, you know, pick it up, put it in my pocket. You know, finish walking my way to the post office. I get up to the counter, and the guy says, the postmaster goes, you're a nickel short. I said, I just happened to have. I was all like, I got it right here. I was just like, I got it. That's what I found, the nickel. I didn't tell him that I found it. I said, oh, look what I got it. So when my kids come home from school that day, I'm saying, you guys aren't going to believe what happened. I'm all giddy about this little experience. Like, oh, my goodness, you know, like a Hallmark commercial kind of. But so I'm all like, you guys aren't going to believe what happened today. And they're looking at me like, okay. And I told them. And then I'm like, well, you know the moral of the story, right? And they're looking at me like, no, like, you know, what, we don't get it. And I said, because God gives you what you need, exactly what you need, when you need it, and not a nickel more. And they're like, oh, good grief. They're rolling their eyes like, oh, here she goes again. You know, it's like, oh, make it stop, you know. It's just like, oh, we're so over this with her. But so, you know, just like I just thought it was cool. And I, you know, so then the nickel story kind of got born, because when I came here, then I had to write a paper, a personal experience, and I shared the experience of, you know, moving to Florida and how that all happened and having the nickel and, you know, the whole thing. And so it was just, it was a really cool experience. So whenever the money thing with me, it's almost like God, and a lot of times I get exactly what I need when I need it. And in fact, 2 weeks ago, I went to pick my grandma up at the airport. I needed stamps, again, the stamp thing, and there was a machine. So, you know, they're $7.40 a book now, right? Well, so I put $8 in the machine to get a book of stamps, and I got back 12 nickels. How cool is that? And I'm showing my mom, look, 12 nickels. And she's like, yeah, okay, whatever. You know, I go, the nickel story, Mom, you know, it's like, you know, don't you get it? So, you know, it's something with me with the money and God. And it's just that, I don't know what to tell you. That's how he works with me, you know. It's just kind of a little thing we got going on. And, you know, when I find even a penny, I'm like, thank you, God, for getting my back. So I don't know what else. Like, you know, tonight I'm going to give my best speech on my way home right now. I'm going to give the best talk I ever gave, ever, ever. You guys are going to miss it probably. But anyway, I'm really glad that you, isn't that how we do? Because that, thank you, boy, you know, I'll tell you, but I probably sleep really good tonight. So I thank y'all for being here, and thanks for letting me share. I've got to gather my show and tell stuff.